Case number 11-1480, James Riffin, Petitioner v. Surface Transportation Board, et al. Mr. Riffin for the petitioner, Mr. Camaro for the respondents.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. We have ourselves a beautiful day. I'm James Riffin. I'm the petitioner in this proceeding. There are two issues in this proceeding. May a prospective common carrier limit what it holds out to carry? Did I waive my right for judicial review of this issue?
Right. So why don't we talk about the first one first? Why don't we talk about whether or not you forfeited your right to judicial review?
That's what I propose to do first, Your Honor.
Excellent.
I filed an application to become a rail carrier. I provided the information indicated in the applicable regulation. Conrail commented that it felt that I needed to file more detailed traffic and financial information. I indicated the commodities that I proposed to hold out to carry. No one filed any objections. The board did not request any additional information as permitted by 49 CFR 1150.8.
So is your argument that you had no notice regarding the board's policy as to hazardous materials because the board had not promulgated a regulation?
I am arguing that and a bit more, Your Honor. To be more precise, when it comes to the common law, Congress is the one that changes the common law, not the board. In addition, the board is bound by ICC precedent and by its own precedent.
Aren't you moving into the merits now?
Yeah.
I beg your pardon?
I said you're moving into the merits now, aren't you?
The question is, am I on notice that I should file with my application a memorandum of law to indicate why I'm going to limit what I'm going to hold out to carry? Common law has always given a common carrier the right to limit what they hold out. This very court has so pronounced in 1976.
So let me see if I understand. Does your waiver argument turn on your understanding of the responsibility of a railroad to carry hazardous materials? I mean, let's assume that you're wrong about that. Assume that that the statute 101A, that the statute leaves it up to the board to decide, reasonably and based on evidence, what a common carrier is supposed to require or not. Now, if that's the case, are you conceding you did waive your argument?
I did not waive my argument in no way.
Okay, so I don't understand why you were, in response to Judge Rogers' question about waiver, why you're talking about the statute and the common law. I guess I just don't understand your point. I thought your point was you filed an application. Nobody objected to the issue of whether you should or should not carry hazardous materials. And now the question is whether or not the board's decision is correct. I thought that was your argument.
That's pretty much it, Your Honor. I filed an application. Mm-hmm. The regulation is pretty detailed. I read it. I followed it, what I thought, to the letter. And no one objected. It's my understanding of the common law that common carriers have the right to indicate what they're going to hold out to carry, and it's appropriate for you to say that in your application. If you're going to limit what you're going to carry, you need to make that known up front. I did. We've never had a case where a common carrier making an application has limited what they propose to carry and had that case be rejected.
All right, so.
My argument is I have had no notice and no opportunity to respond. It's a due process issue. Had the board wanted me to address the issue, They should have asked for additional information as provided in 49 CFR 1150.8. They have the absolute right to do it, and it expressly states the board may request additional information.
All right. All right, so let's, as Judge Tatel classified it, we'll turn to the merits.
To the merits. The primary issue in this case is whether Congress has abrogated a common carrier's common law right to limit what it holds out to carry. There's no question what the common law says. The real question is, has Congress changed the common law? That's the question.
Right, and what's your best argument that it hasn't?
The Hepburn Act adopted the common law. Between the passage of the Transportation Act in 1920 and the passage of the Interstate Commerce Commission Termination Act in 1996, the ICC held on a number of occasions that a common carrier is not obligated to carry everything. In number 31656, they held they didn't have to carry circuses. And 26957?
Right, but the board is doing, the board is interpreting 101A, right? When it says you don't have to carry circus animals, correct?
The board, well, this is what the ICC did, well, and this ICC. Is prior to 11101A, it was 1-4 then. And the language is a bit different between the two statutes. It's actually significant different.
So when the board is making a decision about whether it's okay for a railroad not to carry a circus, it's interpreting 101A, right? Which requires a carrier to, quote, provide the transportation or service on reasonable request, correct? Well, isn't that what the board is doing? It's interpreting that language. And the board has concluded that that carrying hazardous materials is critical to the effective national transportation policy, and it's reached a different conclusion with respect to circuses, correct?
I'm not going to agree with
Your
Honor.
Is that not right?
I'm not going to agree with Your Honor.
Well, tell me why I'm wrong about that.
11101 applies to existing carriers. It says a carrier providing transportation. That's an existing carrier. If you are providing transportation, whatever transportation you were providing, then you must quote rates. That's what the court, Sixth Circuit, held in Akron. If you're providing the transportation, you're obligated to publish a tariff and quote rates. The question is, if you're a new carrier.
So you think there's a material difference between a carrier who refuses. So you have two carriers. They both refuse to carry X. One refuses to carry it because they refuse to file a tariff, and the other because they exclude it from what they'll carry. You think those are different?
I would say the real difference is whether or not the carrier has held out to carry it from day one. That's the significant difference. In Akron, and
so
all these other cases.
Carrier, you think a common carrier is only required to carry what it decides to hold itself out to carry?
That's what the common law says. It's held out
that
for centuries.
About Section 101.
Section 101 says if you are providing transportation, I wasn't. I'm proposing to provide it. And I'm proposing to provide what it is I choose to provide, and the common law allows me to limit what it is I choose to provide.
Okay, so suppose we don't accept that distinction. What's your next argument? That is between existing and new carriers. What then? What? Or is that? It, or are you saying that if we don't agree with you about that, then you agree?
I think what the court is trying to look at is does Chevron apply? Is the board Chevron, the board, if a statute doesn't address a specific issue, then the board has the right to interpret it. I believe that's kind of the area that the court is looking at the moment.
Okay.
And I'm saying when it comes to common carrier obligations and changing the common law, only Congress can change it. So I'm saying to the court, what the court needs to do is address the issue.
I see. So your point...
Has Congress changed the common law?
Okay, so your point is that the significant thing here is Congress itself has not required carriers, railroads, to carry hazardous materials, right?
This case isn't limited to hazardous materials. This case... Hazardous materials just happens to be the one product that I chose not to carry. But this case is not about TIH and hauling hazardous materials. It's nothing to do with that. This case is about a rail carrier's common law right to limit what it chooses to carry. Whatever it is, if you don't want to carry livestock, you're not required to carry it. But if you don't restrict your holding out, then you are required to carry it because you didn't limit yourself.
All right, so your application stated that it was submitted pursuant to the statute.
Yes.
All right, and you're proposing to operate the industrial track as a line of railroad.
Correct.
And then you state the applicant explicitly proposes to limit the goods to be shipped to non-toxic IH products. So the board responds, there's a statutory policy. We have interpreted that policy, and it doesn't allow you to do what you want to do.
Well, that's where it is. I disagree.
All right. So you don't think Congress could delegate through this statute and the Section 11101?
I didn't say they couldn't. I say they didn't.
No,
there's a difference.
They didn't because... You're saying the board could not reasonably interpret its statutory authority to come up with the rule it has.
The board does not have the right to abrogate the common law. If you look at the underlying statute of 11101, which is 1-4, the courts long ago held the ICC did not have the right, the jurisdiction to interpret 1-4. If you look at the language of 1-4 and you look at the language 11-101, the only difference between those two, that there is a phrase in both of them. Provide transportation upon reasonable service is sort of how it goes.
Right.
That phrase appears in both. Mm-hmm. The courts have held the ICC never had the right to interpret 1-4 unless there was some other issue that they also could interpret. But if that was the only issue, they did not have the right, the jurisdiction, to interpret 1-4. Only a court can do that. And the part of the reason is for that is only Congress can change the common law.
Mr. Riffin,
Mr. Riffin, Judge Griffith has a question.
My notes show that on page 13 of your reply brief that you concede that the statute imposes duties on common carriers above and beyond those at common law. Am I misreading your brief?
The courts have held that 11101 supplements the common law. It doesn't change it. It supplements it. And what I find particularly bothersome, the board is attempting to argue a common carrier, when one wants to become a common carrier, you're required to carry all commodities. All commodities. Well, the problem with that is the board itself has exempted a considerable number of commodities from its regulation. They have already said, you have to carry all commodities except, and then there's a long list of the ones you don't have to carry. And they've also held, particularly in the American Orient Express case, that you don't have to even carry freight of any kind if you want to be a common carrier. And if you're limiting your holding out to carrying passengers, you don't even have to carry all passengers. You don't have to carry children if they're under 8.
What is your point about this? As I understand these cases, they are all board exercises its interpretive authority under 101A. Isn't that what it is? Aren't all those cases the board interpreting the phrase shall provide the transportation or service on reasonable grounds?
I don't know if it is or not. And if it's attempting to, I'm convinced it has the right to do it unless there's some other issues involved. And that's what I get back to.
Right,
the board can't make the decision what it is you're required to carry. It doesn't have the jurisdiction to do that, is what the courts have held. Now, this court can change its mind. This court in 1976 expressly stated a carrier is not obligated to carry everything tendered to it. It's not required to serve everybody. So, for this court to change, to take a different position, it needs to distinguish what it's done in the past from what it might do today.
Let us hear from the board, and we'll give you some time on reply.
Did I hear you say you want to hear from the board now? Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'll start by briefly addressing the waiver issue. The point on the waiver issue is that this case involves not only Section 1101A, but Section 10901 of the Act, which is the basic statutory provision for the issuance of certificates. And we issue certificates unless they're inconsistent with the public convenience and necessity. So in Mr. Riffin's application, he had to make his case on why the certificate that he wanted with this...
Where does that requirement come from?
Section 10901 of the Act is...
No, where is it that he's required? So the board's position is that in support of his plan to exclude hazardous materials, he had to file along with that a legal argument as to why that he thought that was okay. Is that your theory?
That is our theory.
But where does that come from? I have to tell you, I've never heard anything like that before. Here's the way the case looks to me. Tell me what's wrong with it.
Okay,
they file an application for a certificate, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. With a restriction.
Yeah, with a restriction. There's an opposition to it, not based on the restriction, but based on the alleged failure to file some financial information, right?
Correct.
The board denies their certificate. Doesn't that mean the issue is now before us?
The board denied the certificate.
Yeah, so
what
else should they have done?
Well, the board denied the certificate on the ground that the request for the restriction was fundamentally inconsistent with law and policy, which Mr. Riffin knew about.
Yeah,
now, if you look at our regulation, in particular 1150.10 G.
Which one?
1150.10G, which says 1150.10G.
And what does that say?
Public participation?
What are you referring to?
1150.10G, the last sentence.
If there is no opposition...
Additional evidence will not be filed, and a decision will be reached using the information in the application.
Okay.
So the application is the document where you make a prima facie case for what you want.
Where does it say that?
Well, it says, Your Honor, that the board will use the information in the application.
Right, and you did. The board did that here. Mr. Riffin said he's not going to carry hazardous materials, and the board denied it. But the board didn't deny it because he hadn't provided a legal justification for that.
Well, the board denied it on the basis that it was inconsistent
Correct.
With the policy that he knew about, and In that case,
I never heard a waiver theory like this before. Do you have any case that supports this theory that the board... as I understand it, you're saying that applicants have to, in addition to filing an application, they have to provide a legal justification for whatever exclusions or particular provisions they have, even if no one opposes it, right?
Do you know of any
case that supports that?
Well, I think that you know, the basic principle of Tucker Truck supports that, because...
The basic principle of what?
You have to make your legal position known to the board at a time and manner that is appropriate for the proceeding.
Where else but
in an application?
Yeah.
When you want a restriction which you know on its face is fundamentally inconsistent with the board's interpretation of the law.
Well, he doesn't know that, for starters. His whole position is that it isn't inconsistent.
But he participated, we don't agree that he wasn't on notice, since the board decisions are very clear that it's a requirement, if you are a rail common carrier, that you have to carry or be available to carry hazardous materials on reasonable request.
That's the merits of the case.
Yes, that is the merits,
that's
Your
the
Honor.
Merits. I think that would be best if I moved on to the merits.
Went
to the merits. Right. That's a good idea.
On the merits, we believe that it is obvious that the board has the authority to decide under Section 10901C that an application is inconsistent with the public means and necessity because the applicant does not want to carry, wants to restrict his certificate obligation to carry products that the board has said need to be carried in the public interest. And so that much is clear. And I don't know that I really have to say too much else about that unless you have specific questions.
I know. Let me go back to the waiver question then, okay? Suppose he had said, is this what you wanted him to say? I, in support of my certificate, my application here, to exclude hazardous materials, I believe that position is supported by the common law.
And you have no authority.
Is that?
And yeah. You have, that basically, you have no authority.
Yeah. Is that what you wanted? Now, suppose he had said that.
Then we would have issued a decision that addressed that particular issue. And that's the problem, is that, how does the board get to address that kind of issue when it gets a certificate application where the party is requesting a restriction that is just fundamentally inconsistent with everything that the board has said.
Mm-hmm.
And so the board says that's fundamentally inconsistent with our view of the law and policy.
Well, then
and then he comes back and he says, well, you don't have any authority.
Yeah.
So
why didn't the board reject it on the grounds that he hadn't provided any justification?
Maybe
you would have had a case then, I guess.
It's certainly we could have rejected it on the ground that it was incomplete, but it was certainly advantageous to Mr. Riffin to know that in advance.
Right. It might have been a good idea for him to have done that. I got that point. It might have been a good idea. Maybe he would have convinced you. I don't know. Doesn't sound like it, but, maybe he would have. But I just, what you hear me saying is I don't see where this obligation to provide a legal justification for it comes from.
Well, so. Obviously the court's going to decide that, the board's position is that when you want a restriction, when you want a grant of authority that is fundamentally inconsistent with the board's reading of law and policy, which is obvious, that it's not unreasonable to understand that in order to make a prima facie case in your application, you have to explain what you want and why legally you want it. Because otherwise, the board doesn't get the opportunity to decide the legal issue that the applicant surely understood he was raising. Beyond that, Your Honor, I submit that the case should be dismissed on the ground of waiver, and if it's not dismissed on the grounds of waiver, it is clear that, you know, as a matter of law and policy, the board was correct on the merits in denying the certificate.
How do you respond to your opponent's argument that the common law was well established and that there's nothing in the statute that abrogates the common law in any way?
Well, I think that argument was specifically rejected by the Sixth Circuit in Akron Canton. And if you look at this court's decision in the Delta Airlines case, interpreting the analogous provision of the Federal Aviation Act, that this court said you have to look not only at the common law, but at the public responsibilities of an air carrier under the statutory common carrier obligation. So under the statutory common carrier obligation, it is clear that the agency has the ultimate supervisory responsibility to decide what an applicant, what a rail carrier must carry, or at least must carry, subject to the requirement that the request be reasonable, and that the agency decides what classes of commodities must be or can be excluded from that obligation. And we did it here in the context of a certificate case, because the board said that as a matter of policy, under the public convenience and necessity standard, we're not going, if you want a certificate, we're not going to give you a permanent restriction on your authority to carry TIH. You'll have to be like everybody else if you want a certificate. And, you know, then you can come in and seek an exemption if you think you're entitled to an exemption.
So, I just need to be clear. Mr. Riffin makes the point that the board, even assuming it has the authority to make this decision, never addressed the factual context in which his application was submitted. Well, namely, that the authorities the board cited all related to existing railroads. He is a new application, so that may raise different considerations for the board, namely, why make him go through one process then just to turn around and seek an exemption? Why not do it all in one proceeding?
Well, the board said that, you know, as a matter of policy, we're not going to restrict you in advance, and we're not going to give you that certificate restriction in advance.
Well, they don't
and in
say
addition,
that. They don't say that. I mean, they just treat him, his application, like the railroads that were carrying on which the board has previously rendered a decision requiring carriage.
Well, I don't think that the board doesn't believe that there's a difference. And in any event, in the case we said that if you're going to be a carrier, right, I mean, what Mr. Riffin said was the insurance is too expensive. And what the board said is under our policy, that's not good enough. If you want to be a carrier, you know, the fact that it may be expensive to carry something, you know, doesn't entitle you to a certificate restriction on the carriage. Unless you have any other, do you have any other questions?
No, thank you.
In that case, we ask for dismissal or denial.
May I address the court?
Yes, please, Mr. We'll give you a couple of minutes.
The respondent indicated they posed a rhetorical question. How can we address the issue if you don't put it in your application? 49 CFR 1150.8 gives the answer to the question. It says if the board wants more information, it can ask for more additional information. So it would have been very simple. The board could have issued an order of some sort saying, we want you to address the issue of whether or not you're compelled to haul all products. Tell us the legal basis for your decision not to carry everything, in which case I would have given my argument. My other point is, if you want this information to be included in an application, that requirement should be stated in the regulation. I followed the regulation. If you read the board's cases, they don't address this issue. None of them do. If you read Akron, which is the case that the board primarily relies upon, Akron did not hold, Akron stated, the ICC is not compelling you to carry nuclear material. They're compelling you to issue a tariff. And the reason they're doing that is because you've been hauling this stuff for a really long time since you became a railroad and since this stuff became available. You're not doing something different, and you're in fact hauling it to a lot of different places, 31 different places. You just don't want to publish a tariff to go to four particular locations.
So let me just be clear about one thing. You file an application that says you explicitly propose to limit what you're going to carry.
Correct.
The board says we have adopted an interpretation of the statute which sets out a policy that it would be inconsistent with the public interest and necessity, the statutory standard, for us to issue a certificate that includes that limitation. So the statute also says if you get the certificate, then you can proceed to seek an exemption. So that's the statutory scheme as interpreted by the board. At this point, what is your obligation to raise this, the board has acted beyond its authority argument? Can you, as did Mr. Strohmeyer, file some type of proceeding before the board asking them to reopen or to reconsider?
Mr. Strohmeyer did ask the board to reopen it and reconsider. We already know what the board's answer is. They denied it. So that's another point I wanted to make earlier.
So you had no obligation to do this because Mr. Strohmeyer did?
I didn't file it to reopen and reconsider because I pretty much knew what the answer was going to be. Mr. Strohmeyer, I didn't have to speculate. The board's decision was pretty clear.
But your position is the board had no authority to reach that decision.
My position is the board doesn't have the statutory authority to compel a common carrier to hold out to carry everything. They don't have the authority, and they've acted based on that position, and now they're trying to change the rules of the game in the middle of the game. And that's what I find bothersome. It's due process.
Mr. Griffin,
if you want
the carrier. Excuse me. Judge Griffith has a question.
I'm sorry. Mr. Griffin, the board in its brief doesn't rely solely on Akron. It also cites to a 1921 Supreme Court case, Director General of Railroads versus Viscose or Viscosi Company. And I couldn't find anywhere in your brief where you discussed that case. But in that case, the Supreme Court upheld the decision of the ICC that required common carriers to carry materials, I think it was butter, poultry, and eggs, or something like that, that they didn't want to carry. And in that, the court said the contention, and I'm reading from page 504 of that decision, 254 U.S. 504, the contention of the carriers that the common law and not the Interstate Commerce Act furnished the measure of their obligation to the public was promptly overruled by the Commission, informed as it was by wide experience in the experience of traffic affairs and the administration of the Act. The Supreme Court upheld that view. Now, that seems to me to undercut, if not eviscerate, your argument that the statute does nothing more than codify the common law. But the Supreme Court in 1921 was saying that there are statutory obligations that go beyond the common law. You didn't say anything about that in your briefs. That seems to me a rather significant oversight on your part. Can you answer?
I believe Your Honor was referring to the Lake and Rail Egg and Butter case.
No, the Supreme Court in Viscosi referred to those cases. That's true.
I was referring to a later case where they cite that as justification for the later case's decision?
Yes.
Okay. The Lake and Rail Egg and Butter case. In the board's brief to this court, the board acknowledges that when it comes to motor carriers, trucks, it permits them to carve out niches. It then makes the argument that because trucks are using public infrastructure, they don't need to have the right to carry everything. And then they make the argument that because railroads use their own private infrastructure, they have an obligation to carry everything. Well, if you actually think about and read the Lake and Rail case, that wasn't the justification for the case. The case was that the railroads were using the public's infrastructure, the lakes and the docks, etc., that the U.S. government had spent an awful lot of money developing. And they said that if you're going to use the public's infrastructure, then you have to carry whatever the public offers you. In this case, the counter to that is, if you're not using something that the public has paid for, then you don't have to serve everyone. It goes back to the original concept of common carriers, and why does the king have any say in this at all? It's because you're using the king's way. If you're using the king's way, then you have to do what the king asked you to do. If you're using the waters belong to the U.S. government. Consequently, you have to do what the U.S. government asks you to do. If you're using your own private property, you're not using the king's way. So the king has less of a say over what it is you carry. So what the king can say is you have to carry it safely.
And so in this case, can the king not say that rates are unreasonable?
The king can say your rate is reasonable or it's not reasonable.
Well, but I thought she said...
And they've done that for ages.
But I thought she was saying there's a difference between trucks and railroads.
The difference is trucks use the public way.
Right.
Consequently, trucks should be required to carry everything according to the board's argument. But the board has said many a time, and they even acknowledge it in their brief, we don't make truckers carry everything. They can limit what they carry, and they can severely limit what they carry, and we're okay with that, even they're using the king's way. And then they turn around and say, railroads, because you're using your own private property, we're going to make you do a lot more than the truckers are doing when they're using the public's property. I basically think that's an unequal protection of the law situation is kind of what it is I come up with.
All right. Judge Griffith, did you have any further questions?
No, thank you.
All right. We will take the case under advisement.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you.